Today we're starting a new chapter, and we're going to treat some topics that you have seen before in your calculus class. However, we shall use the deep properties of the real numbers that we have developed in this text to obtain some important new insights. Therefore, you should not think of this chapter as review. Look at the concepts introduced here with the power of your new understanding of real analysis. Definition: let E be a subset of the reals, and let F be a real-valued function with domain E. Fix a point P in the reals that is an accumulation point of E. Let L be a real number. We say that the limit as x and E goes to P of f of x equals L, if for each epsilon bigger than 0, there is a delta bigger than 0 such that when x is an E and 0 less than absolute value x minus P less than delta, then absolute f of x minus L is less than epsilon. In words, we say that the limit as x tends to P of f is equal to L. The definition makes precise the notion that we could force f at x to be just as close as we please to L by making x sufficiently close to p. Notice that the definition puts the condition 0 less than absolute x minus p less than delta on x, so that x is not allowed to take the value p. In other words, we do not look at x equals p, but rather at x near to p. Also observe that we only consider the limit of f at a point p that is not isolated. In the exercises, you will be asked to discuss why it would be nonsensical to use the above definition to study the limit at an isolated point. Example: let E be the reals take away 0. Let f at x be x times sine 1 over x. Then the limit as x goes to 0 of f of x is 0. To see this, let epsilon be bigger than 0. Choose delta equal epsilon. If 0 less than absolute value x minus 0 less than delta, then absolute f at x minus 0 is absolute x times sine 1 over x minus 0, which is absolute x times sine 1 over x, which is less than or equal to x because sine is smaller than 1. X is smaller than delta, and that's equal to epsilon. So by making x within delta of 0, we get that f of x is within epsilon of 0, and that's what we need to prove so that the limit exists and equals 0. And there's a figure here illustrating this function. Second example, let E be the reals, let G of x be 1 if x is rational, 0 if x is irrational. Then the limit as x goes to P of G of x does not exist at any point P in the reals. This is often called the Dirichlet function, and it's useful as an example in many contexts. To see this, fix P in the reals. Seeking a contradiction, assume there is a limiting value L for G at P. If this is so, then we take epsilon is equal to a half, and can find a delta bigger than 0 so that 0 less than absolute x minus p less than delta implies absolute gx minus l less than epsilon, which is a half. If we take x to be rational, then the last line says that 1 minus l is less than a half in absolute value, while if we take x to be irrational, then the line says that 0 minus l in absolute value is less than a half. But then the triangle inequality says that the absolute value of 1 minus 0 equals the absolute value of 1 minus L plus L minus 0 less than or equal to absolute value 1 minus L plus absolute value L minus 0, which by the previous two lines is less than 1. So we've proved that 1 is less than 1. That's obviously a contradiction. So F does not have a limit at any point. Proposition: let F be a function with domain E. Let P be an accumulation point of E. If the limit is x goes to P of f of x equals L, and also the limit as x goes to P of f of x equals M, then L equals M. In other words, the limit, as we've defined it, is unique. Proof: let epsilon be greater than 0. Choose delta 1 bigger than 0 so that if x is an E and 0 less than absolute x minus P less than delta 1, then absolute fx minus L is less than epsilon over 2. Similarly, choose delta 2 bigger than 0 so that if x is an E and absolute x minus p less than delta 2, then absolute f of x minus m is less than epsilon over 2. Let delta be the minimum of delta 1 and delta 2. If x is an E and absolute x minus p is bigger than 0 and less than delta, then the triangle inequality tells us that absolute L minus m is equal to absolute L minus f at x plus f at x minus m, which is less than or equal to, by the triangle inequality, absolute L minus f at x plus absolute f at x minus m, which by our choice above is less than epsilon over 2 plus epsilon over 2, which is epsilon. So we've shown that absolute L minus m is less than epsilon for every positive epsilon, and that means that L must equal m. The point of the last proposition is that if a limit is calculated by two different methods, then the same answer will result. While of primarily philosophical interest right now, this will be important information later when we establish the existence of certain limits. This is a good time to note that the limit as x goes to p of f of x and the limit as h goes to 0 of f of p plus h are equal in the sense that if one limit exists, then so does the other, and they both have the same value. This is useful information when one is calculating limits. In order to facilitate checking that certain limits exist, we now record some elementary properties of the limit. This requires that we first recall how functions are combined. Suppose that f and g are each functions which have domain E. We define the sum or difference of f and g to be the function f plus or minus g of x, which is f and x plus or minus g of x. The product of f and g is the function f times g of x, which is f and x times g of x, and the quotient of f and g to be f divided g of x, which is f and x over g of x. Note that the quotient is only defined at points x for which g of x is non-zero. Now we have these properties of the limit. Let f and g be functions with domain E and fix a point P that is an accumulation point of E. Assume that the limit of f of x is x goes to p equals L and the limit of g of x is x goes to p equals M. Then the limit as x goes to p of f plus or minus g of x is L plus or minus M. The limit as x goes to p of f times g of x is L times M. And the limit as x goes to p of f divided by g of x is L over M, provided M is not zero. We will prove part B about the product, and the other parts are treated in the exercises. They're very similar. So let epsilon be bigger than zero. We may also assume that epsilon is less than one. Choose delta 1 bigger than 0 so that if x is e in E and absolute x minus p is greater than 0 less than delta 1, then f at x minus L in absolute value is less than epsilon divided by twice the quantity absolute m plus 1. Choose delta 2 bigger than 0 so that if x is in E and absolute x minus p is bigger than 0 less than delta 2, then absolute gx minus m is less than epsilon divided by 2 absolute L plus 1. Notice that this last inequality implies that gx in absolute value is less than m plus epsilon. Let delta be the minimum of delta 1 and delta 2. If x is at e and 0 is less than absolute x minus p less than delta, then the absolute value of fx times gx minus l times m equals the absolute value of fx minus l times gx plus gx minus m times l. That's just adding, subtracting the term L times g of x, and by the triangle inequality, this is less than or equal to the absolute value of the quantity fx minus L times gx plus absolute the quantity gx minus m times L, and this is less than, by our choice of delta, epsilon over twice absolute m plus 1 times gx plus epsilon over twice absolute L plus 1 times L. And this is less than or equal to epsilon over twice absolute m plus 1 times absolute m plus epsilon plus epsilon over 2, and this is less than epsilon over 2 plus epsilon over 2, and this equals epsilon. So the limit exists and equals L times m. End of proof. Example, it is a simple matter to check that if fx is x, then the limit as x goes to p of fx is p for every real p. Indeed, for epsilon bigger than 0, we may take delta equal epsilon. Also, if gx equals alpha is the constant function taking value alpha, then the limit as x goes to p of g of x is alpha. It follows then from parts A and B of the theorem that if x is any polynomial function, then the limit as x goes to p of f of x is f of p. Moreover, if r is any rational function, which is a quotient of polynomials, then we may use part C of the theorem to conclude that the limit as x goes to p of rx equals rp at all points p at which the rational function rx makes sense. In other words, at all points at which we're not dividing by zero. Example, if x is a small positive real number, then zero is less than sine x is less than x. This is true because sine x is the nearest distance from the point cosine x sine x to the x-axis, while x is the distance from that point to the x-axis along an arc. And of course, the arc is longer than the straight line. If epsilon is bigger than 0, then we set delta equal epsilon. We conclude that if 0 is less than absolute x minus 0 less than delta, then absolute sine x minus 0 is less than x, absolute x, which is less than delta equals epsilon. Also, since sine of minus x is minus sine x, the same result holds when x is a negative number with small absolute value. Therefore, the limit as x goes to 0 of sine x is 0. Since cosine x is the square root of 1 minus sine squared for all x in minus pi over 2 pi over 2, we may conclude from the preceding theorem that the limit of cosine x as x goes to 0 is 1. Now fix any real number p. We have the limit as x goes to p of sine x is the limit as h goes to 0 of sine p plus h. This is the alternative way of writing a limit that we looked at a few moments ago. And using the sum formula for sine, this is the limit as h goes to 0 of sine p cosine h plus cosine p sine h, which is sine p times 1 plus cosine p times 0, which is sine p. We, of course, have used parts a and b of the theorem to commute the limit process with addition and multiplication. A similar argument shows that the limit as x goes to p of cosine x is cosine p. Remark, in the last example, we have used the definition of sine function and cosine function that you learned in calculus in a later lecture. When we learn about series of functions, we will learn a more rigorous method for treating the trigonometric functions. We conclude this discussion by giving a characterization of the limit of a function using sequences. Let f be a function with domain E and p an accumulation point of E, then the limit as x goes to p of f of x equals L, if and only if, for any sequence aj and e take away p, satisfying the limit as j goes to infinity of aj equal p, it holds that the limit as j goes to infinity of f of aj equals L. Proof. Assume that the first condition fails. Then there is an epsilon bigger than 0, so that for no delta bigger than 0, is it the case that when 0 is less than absolute x minus p less than delta, then absolute f of x minus L is less than epsilon? So we're assuming that fails. Thus, for each delta equals 1 over j, we may choose the number aj and e take away p, with absolute aj minus p bigger than 0 less than 1 over j, and f of aj minus L an absolute value bigger than or equal to epsilon, but then the second condition fails for this sequence aj. If the second condition fails, then there is some sequence aj so that the limit of aj equals p, but the limit as j goes to infinity of f at aj is not L. This means there is an epsilon bigger than 0 that such that for infinitely many aj, it holds that absolute f aj minus L is bigger than or equal to epsilon, but then no matter how small delta, there will be an aj satisfying 0 less than absolute aj minus p less than delta, since aj tends to p, and f aj minus L bigger than or equal to epsilon, and that's a contradiction. And that's the end of our discussion for today. I will see you on Friday.